What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
This is the new Weight Watchers, built for real life and real results, no matter what mode you're in. Maddie went all in for her big day and lost 33 pounds. Emily lost 85 pounds and hit her goal while still living her life.
Weight Watchers gave me the tools and I feel amazing.
Join the millions of members and lose weight with the number one doctor-recommended weight loss program. Lose more at WeightWatchers.com.
At 6 months, participants in a clinical trial of Weight Watchers program lost an average of 12 pounds.
Hello, everyone. You're listening to The Katie Halper Show, and I'm your host, Katie Halper. If you like the show, please leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And as always, we remind you that this show could not happen without the support of our listeners. To support the show, visit patreon.com/The Katie Halper Show, where for just $1 a month, you can make this show happen. And for $5 a month, you get great bonus content, including extended interviews, bonus episodes, sneak peeks at my upcoming documentary feature film, and more. Hello, and welcome to The Katie Halper Show. We are so excited to be here with you, joined by you. We have a great show for you today. We have two interviews that we're going to be playing, interview excerpts, if you will, clips, one from David Cross and one from Wallace Shawn. But we're also going to be going over and reveling in the Zionist meltdown over the Academy Award Best Documentary Film for No Other Land. And that, of course, as you'll see shortly, really caused people, very bad people, to be very upset. And so that's always a win. And joining me to do this and go over this and revel in this and celebrate is Matt Lieb, the host of Bat Hasbara, the most moral podcast. So let's bring Matt to the stage. Hi, Matt.
Thanks a lot, Holly Woke, for doing anti-Semitism. Mm-hmm. I'm canceling my Netflix subscription.
Yeah.
What's up?
Well, actually, it's interesting, Matt, that you brought up anti-Semitism because people were very upset before this thing even happened. I don't know if you guys saw this. There was a letter by something called the Brigade.
The Brigade.
Right. Exactly. So let's take a look at this Brigade letter. And the Brigade, by the way, is so cowardly that they are anonymous.
Yeah.
So I'll just read before, as we wait for, to show the screenshot. Let me just tell you something about the Brigade and what they did. So they said, there are like two levels. There's the great thing is what the Brigade said, but the other great thing, and in fact, I'm just going to show this because it doesn't, it's really hard to do it justice without showing the actual article. Mm-hmm. So, okay, here we go. All right. So if you scroll at the top, Jewish Hollywood protests artists for ceasefire pins after Biba's body's release. Have you no shame? Mm. Okay. By the way, Jewish Hollywood, I like to not hear that unless I'm making the statement sarcastically.
Yeah, it's okay.
But thanks, Hollywood Reporter.
It's okay. The Hollywood Reporter is saying that. So it's fine.
It's totally fine. Yeah. It isn't at all problematic.
How do you know it's Jewish Hollywood if they are literally all anonymous?
Exactly. Right. Right. We should change this to like evangelicals, evangelical Hollywood protests artists for ceasefire pins after Biba's body's release. Have you no shame?
Yeah.
The Brigade, representing some 700 producers, filmmakers, agents, managers, publicists, executives, actors, and actresses, is taking issue with the letter encouraging attendees of the 2025 Academy Awards to wear controversial emblem. Mm-hmm. I love the way they write it's controversial, as if that goes without say.
Right. Yeah. Of course.
It's just so annoying.
Very controversial. So much so that they had to make up a reason why it's controversial.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't know if people have seen, but they've compared it to the bloody hands of some. There was, I believe, Israelis who were killed in a building in the Second Intifada. And it's like his hands were bloody. That's what it is. It's a symbol of Jewish death. As opposed to a red hand, which could be anyone's blood. And you know, the bloody hands of, let's say, I don't know, upwards of 20,000 children, maybe. I don't know.
Right. Yeah.
Just a guess.
Well, No, but I definitely like this weird, like, what's funny about it is that they're kind of applying the weird, like, old, like, blood libel, paranoid, like, conspiracy theories, but to the people calling for a ceasefire.
Oh, yeah.
It's like Jewish reparations, maybe.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, they love it. They love it.
Yeah, they love it. Yeah. You love to see it. So they were really mad. I do think it is a good sign, though, that they were anonymous. It shows, I think, some progress.
Yeah. They're like, have you no shame? Because we do. We have lots of shame. Exactly. So much so that we are not going to tell you who we are. That's always a sign that you're, you know, on the right side of the moral.
On the right side of history.
Yeah, moral coin.
The moral coin, yeah. So people are already upset about that. Now, if you're upset about that, just imagine how upset they were that this film, No Other Land, was nominated for Best Documentary.
Oh, yeah.
And I know you're all in suspense. You don't know who's going to win.
Yeah. I know you all don't watch the Oscars. You spend most of your time on YouTube.
Yeah. And this, of course, is a film about the Israeli destruction of homes and land theft and settler violence against people in the West Bank.
In Musafer Yatta, which...
Musafer Yatta, right.
Which, you know, is under... military law, which means that none of the people there are equal citizens because Israel is an apartheid state.
Exactly. So you claim. Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch and B'Tselem and Al-Haq and every other credible human rights organization claims.
That's right.
So let's take a look, though, at what happened when this film, which is, by the way, co-directed by a Palestinian director and a Jewish Israeli director. Mm-hmm. Let's take a look at what happened when they won an award at the Berlinale.
We're glad to be here and grateful. It's our first movie since many years. My community, my family has been filming our community being erased by this brutal occupation. I'm here celebrating the award, but also very hard for me to celebrate when there are tens of thousands of my people being slaughtered and massacred by Israel in Gaza. Masafer Yatta, my community, is being also erased by Israeli bulldozers. I ask one thing for Germany, as I am in Berlin here, to respect the UN calls and stop sending weapons to Israel.
So that's the Palestinian co-director, Basil.
I want to say we are standing in front of you now. Me and Basil are the same age. I am Israeli, Basil is Palestinian. And in 2 days, we will go back to a land where we are not equal. I'm living under a civilian law, and Basel is under military law. We live 30 minutes from one another, but I have voting rights, and Basel is not having voting rights. I'm free to move where I want in this land. Basel is, like millions of Palestinians, locked in the occupied West Bank. This situation of apartheid between us, this inequality, it has to end. We ask how we can make a change to end the occupation, to move for a political solution. And we don't really have the answer, but I think one answer is for people to really stand up. There is a lot of powerful people in this room. There is a lot of ministers and people whose voices are heard. We need to call for a ceasefire. We need to call for a political solution to end the occupation.
Okay. So speaking of ministers, there was honestly, you can't make this up. If someone told me that, if someone put this into a screenplay, I'd be like, this is so over the top. Like, don't talk to me like I'm an idiot. What are you talking about? So here's what they did. Ready? A lot of politicians were upset. So you had Berlin's conservative mayor who called the speech intolerable relativization. Mm-hmm. And he said the full responsibility for the deep suffering in Israel and the Gaza Strip lies with Hamas. And then people were really mad at Germany's Minister of Culture, Federal Commissioner for Culture. It's a Green Party politician, Claudia Roth. Somehow she was responsible for it, even though like they didn't pick the winners of the awards ceremony.
Yeah.
But they called for her resignation.
Yeah, because she was seen clapping.
Well, okay, this is the thing, ready? So before that, she was exposed. People were mad at her. They wanted her to resign just because, literally, because they won the award. Mm-hmm. Again, she has no role in that. So what did she do? Like a good German citizen, politician, she said the speeches were shockingly one-sided and characterized by deep hatred of Israel. And she said that not mentioning Hamas terror attack was not acceptable. But here's the thing. Ready, guys? Some really good investigative reporters slash people who watch the internets noticed that this woman was clapping.
Mm-hmm.
She was clapping. She was applauding when they got the award and after the speech. But you know what, Matt?
Yeah, I do.
She has a totally acceptable excuse. Yes. Because everyone, she wasn't clapping for the Palestinian filmmaker.
Mm-hmm.
As she said, she said, quote, her applause was directed at the Jewish Israeli journalist and filmmaker Yuval Abraham,
That's who right.
spoke out in favor of a political solution and a peaceful coexistence in the region.
Yep.
So she was half, what she should have done, honestly, has been like this.
The sound of one hand clapping. That's what she should have done.
That. Yeah. Right. Yeah. That would have been, that's how you're a good Jewish ally.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. To actually say that out loud and just be like, nope, that's the sentence. I'm not going to amend that at all. People will just buy the idea that no, my clapping was supposed to circumvent the Palestinian, who is
exactly
obviously bad, and go only to the Israeli, who made the same movie. Like it's like she thinks that it is going to somehow absolve her of the crime of what? Anti-Semitism? That no.
Yes.
I only clapped for one of them.
Isn't that insane?
It's just like wow.
Again, you'd think that like she'd be having a meeting with her advisors, like in crisis mode. She'd be like, how about you just say, let's just say I clap for one of them. Yeah. They'd be like, oh, come on, that's ridiculous. But no, they were like, good, let's go with it.
The Palestinian was going to wear applause-canceling headphones so that he could not hear when I did the applause. Exactly. Once again, they lied as they do time and time again.
As is their vaunt.
They always lie and break their word.
Can you imagine though? So, and the funny thing about that is that like, what's even the point? You're literally, you look like an idiot and you're not going to satisfy. Do you think a single critic of hers is going to be like, yeah, you're right. Yeah. Okay. That's cool.
Okay. Yeah. Well, now that she's clarified, no, like literally the only people who are satisfied with that are the Israeli lobbies in Germany who are just like, good. I'm glad you know that when you do something like this, you must contractually make a fool of yourself in front of everyone so everyone can see how bought you are by the state of Israel. You know,
it's that they're just kissing the ring.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's so crazy. It's just like the more you degrade yourself, that's the only people who are happy about it is the Israeli government going, good. Degrade yourself. And of course, also the German government, who have stated countless times that their very reason for being is to be an ally for Israel, which is, that'll lead good places.
Germany is like the best example of how another country makes Palestinians pay for their crimes.
Yeah, 100%. Like, that's what they do. They're just like, we know we did a lot of bad things
that
to you.
It went that way. Yeah.
But let's look over here real quick at these Palestinians. Brutal animals, huh?
Yeah, who had nothing to do with the Holocaust. Yes.
It was mostly their idea. So Hitler was like all cool with the Jews and everything. Right. And then one day he got a call from a Palestinian guy who said, well, what about hating Jews? And he was like, wow, that's a good idea. And so he did.
I'm going to run with it.
I'm going to run with it.
I like this.
It's fun.
I like work. This was a good workshopping, and now we do the Holocaust final solution. It's so absurd. Yes. Okay, so then what do we have? Then this is terrible news for the crazy Zionists, but guess who wins the Academy Award for Best Picture, for Best Documentary? Mm-hmm. No Other Land.
Right.
And we're just going to skip right to the, because I'm sure most people saw it, but let's skip to some of the best reactions to that.
Mm-hmm.
And for that one, we're going to have to go to friend of the show, John Poderitz, who is the editor of the Neocon commentary magazine, columnist for the New York Post, was a speechwriter for Ronald Reagan and worked for George H.W. Bush.
Mm-hmm.
So let's take a look at what
all around cool guy.
Right. Really cool guy. Represents the best of Jewish tradition, the Tikkun Olam, if you will, the internationalistic, solidaristic. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anti-fascist, anti-Nazi. Mm-hmm. So let's take a look at what he wrote at first. So far, this is the best Oscars I think I've ever seen, and I've been watching since 1971.
Now, setting yourself up for that Curb Your Enthusiasm meme.
Seriously. Seriously. An hour later, he writes, after No Other Land wins the award, he writes, fuck you, anti-Semitic, anti-Israel, Hollywood filth.
Hell
because
yeah.
I think we can all agree that that is what Hollywood
famously,
is. It's anti-Semitic.
Famously, you know, Hollywood is run by anti-Semites. You know, it's so funny too, because it's like, this is just, it's the staccato-ness of the attack here. It reads like I kind of want to change my Twitter bio to "fuck you, anti-Semitic, anti-Israel Hollywood." I know. That
would be really
describes
good.
Describes
yeah.
me.
Yeah. And then he was on a roll, obviously. So he wrote "Congratulations to Hamas," all caps, mm-hmm. which never makes you look triggered.
Yes.
For its Oscar win. Now let's see them destroyed. You know what always looks really triggered is when you do all caps. And the other thing that makes you look triggered, and this is just like I shouldn't even be giving this advice to my enemies, but you know the smiley face when you're like laughing so hard you're crying?
Yes.
Like if you send me something that's funny and we're like, oh yeah, that's hilarious, and I send that, that's totally fine. It's normal. But if like I'm fighting with you and my response to you is that, like, you're just advertising to the world, you have nothing to say, and you're really triggered and you're pretending not to be.
Yes, 100%. It's the meme with the crying guy wearing a mask of a laughing guy. That's what it actually looks like to the rest of us. And also, like, all I see is tears, homie.
Like,
you can pretend you're laughing, but I know what those tears are.
Well, you know, that's funny. It's like when you have a fake laugh or fake smile, it's like you could be smiling, but I see in the eyes whether or not
that's where
the truth lies.
You can tell with your Mr. Beast-ass eyes that there's nothing there but rage.
Rage, while pretending. And even more pathetic, it's like doubly embarrassing because like it would be one thing to be rageful, but then pretending to not be and thinking anyone believes it.
Right.
Anyway. Okay, so that's not the only thing John Podesta tweeted. Let's take a look at his other tweet. This one was even actually my favorite. "Once you won minor movie awards for making Holocaust things, now it's for anti-Israel things. Thank God the movies are dying."
There's a lot going on there.
So much going on there,
Like, once you won minor awards for...
like, best documentary film?
Right. I'm not even really entirely sure, because Holocaust things, as he's calling them, also have won best picture. So, or is he calling the Oscars a minor award?
Right, yeah.
I'm not even sure what he's mad at there.
Like, I mean, best like makeup department, I guess, would be more of a minor award. No disrespect to people in the makeup world, but like best documentary film or best film, like you said, or best actor or best director and all the stuff that Spielberg has gotten.
Right.
Like, that's not minor. But what if he's like, "I'm actually a huge fan of Cannes and the Caesars and I don't recognize the Oscars. They're not, they're minor leagues."
Yeah. I'm more of a Golden Globes guy.
Yeah, exactly.
I really like that Hollywood Foreign Press. Yeah, it's really
more of a SAG man.
Yeah, I'm more of a SAG awards guy. It's a really weird statement, because also I was like, wait, is he denigrating Hollywood, like Holocaust films as well? I'm not even sure what he's mad at. He's like, there was a time when you won shitty little awards for making Holocaust bullshit.
Holocaust things.
Now people make anti-Israel bullshit and also win the little awards. And it's like, it sounds like you hate everything in this equation. So why don't you go to sleep, Grandpa?
And not to sound self-righteous and pedantic, but like, this was a Holocaust thing.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
This was a Holocaust thing. It's just the Holocaust that you're cheering on.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And the idea that you're just like, you know, there used to be a time where you would win an award for showing us when we die. But now you can't win an award showing us when we're killing others.
Well, right. Exactly.
I will have nothing to do with this.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Yes. Never again meant never again for a very specific group of people. Mm-hmm. In fact, there was one crazy Israel defender who I don't have prepared, but he was mad that he talked all the smack about, you know, about No Other Land. But he was also mad at Adrian Brody. Now, I was mad at Adrian Brody, actually, for different reasons. But he was mad at him for, after winning for a film about the Holocaust, saying all hate is bad.
Right. Yes. I love like, that. Yes.
That's like, that's, again, that's what we would say about these people.
Right.
We'd be like, they are so chauvinist that the idea that never again means never again for anyone is offensive to them.
Right.
But they say this thing out loud again.
Right. Yeah. No, right? It was great because I saw some people trying to praise that, which I would totally understand, where they would go like, you know, he mentioned anti-Semitism, you know, good for him. And the vast majority of the replies to this were just people going, "Fuck him. He said anti-Semitism and all racism." And it's like, what is your problem here exactly? Yeah. And the problem is, they're self-centered. They're just like, no, only talk about us. Never again. Only for us. There is no other racism.
Self-centered, and also using it as a smokescreen to justify the current Holocaust that they're doing right now.
Yeah.
When I say that, I mean, that Israel. But of course, I was annoyed with Adrian Brody because I was like, dude, you got to say it out loud. Like, call out the genocide, call out ethnic cleansing, make it clear.
Yeah. You also 3 minutes, dog.
Use an editor.
Unbelievably long. This is the problem with letting actors talk, I think.
Right.
Is that actors, unless it's written down, they're just going to go on and on. And there's not really much to say, they just go there and they're just like, oh man, the thing about acting. And it's like, I don't care. I don't care.
And the wife, there's also a wife reference.
Yeah, just thank people.
Right. Thank people. And if you're going to win an award for a Holocaust film and you want to make the connection, which I think you should, then make it.
Yeah. Yeah. But no.
Although honestly, it's like, I guess the fact that people were so pissed off about that, I mean, it's so pathetic. How dare you universalize trauma and history?
They literally, the only thing that would have made them happy is if he had gone and gotten the award and then walked over and slapped the Palestinian filmmaker. That's they want. Yeah. All they want.
And said never again.
Yeah, it said never again. This is me.
And I'm Israel.
Yes.
Hi.
Yes. That's what they want.
That's how you commemorate the victims of the Holocaust.
It's really great watching this freak out because of the fact that you can see what is important to these Hezbollah online, pro-Israel people in general, Zionists, their biggest weakness is their vanity and the weakness of their narrative. And every time their narrative is exposed, every time that there is an erosion of support for Israel in the culture shit is what matters to them most. And every time there's an erosion, it freaks them the fuck out because they know that without American support, there is no Jewish ethno state in the Middle East, that they have to find political solutions. There won't be a military solution of kill them all if they don't have American support. So for them, they just value the connection that they have with world Jewry. And they hate when people go, nah, Israel, you're a different thing. It pisses them off to no end because they're always trying to glom onto they glom onto anti-Semitic caricatures as if they're virtues. Like they straight up are just like, they're just like, no other land won't win because we control Hollywood. And I'm like, bro, you are Israeli. You got Gal Gadot and that's it. You maybe have Sacha Baron Cohen, but he's British. Oh, let's be real. But it's like, this entire thing with them is they want to project this level of strength and they like to flatten Jewry, world Jewry, into all being this big pro-Israel thing. And when this happens, it's like, wait, how could Jewish Hollywood let this happen? And it's like, because you even saying Jewish Hollywood weirds us out. I'm sorry, it does.
I mean, I know I say this, I'm like a broken record here, but so maybe we've got some new people to stream. Matt Lieb heads coming over. Say it again. And it bears repeating. I think I've always cared about this issue first and foremost, because it's a human rights and justice and anti-colonialism issue. Right. Mm-hmm. Then, of course, I feel like it's useful to say as a Jew, because I think it's disgusting to pretend that they're acting in our names. Mm-hmm. But the other irony is that they call us anti-Semites and self-loathing. How do you think it's going to work out if you suggest that all Jews support what most of the world sees as a live stream genocide? Mm-hmm. You think you're good for Jews?
No, yeah, it is absolutely. And I've said this before as well, which is Israel's the number one exporter of anti-Semitism worldwide. They are doing anti-Semitism. Everything they do is anti-Semitism. It's not to say it's my primary concern. My primary concern,
but it happens to be
My primary concern is obviously for the people who are being genocided. It's the second half of the concern is that they're being genocided in my name, and that's what fucking pisses me off. Is like it'd be one thing to do a genocide, but you know, what gave,
which we would still oppose,
which we would still oppose,
adds another layer, but
it's personalized it when they say, and also Matt Lieb and Katie Halper, this benefits them, fuck you,
and we're co-signing it. We really get fucked.
So it's just one of those things where, you know, the irony is so great that it bears repeating that the people who claim to care about anti-Semitism the most, in fact, even the organizations that make anti-Semitism their top thing, like the ADL, are essentially just fronts for Israel, which does nothing but perpetuate anti-Semitism worldwide. And that's bad. So they claim anti-Semitism.
Yeah. That's their highest priority. But we all know it's not about anti-Semitism. They're fine for Jews to die. Yes. This is about like a political ethno-nationalist project.
100%. And it's completely, it's just completely fascism. It is like literally these people would slander their own mother if it meant the strengthening of the state, which is fascism. That's what fascism is.
Yeah.
A great example of that
it's mother slander. Yeah. That is fact. That's the most political scientists.
Yes.
Very hard to define it, but right here, we just contributed to political science big time.
That's right. Something, and I'm going to talk about this more on Bad Hezbara, but a former guest of ours, Noy Katzman's brother was killed. Chaim Katzman was killed on October 7th. Chaim was a peace activist. And all of a sudden, after the No Other Land, win.
Win.
All of the Hezbollah started posting pictures of Chaim Katzman and saying this person helped, with the filming of No Other Land. And yet,
wasn't
thanked or mentioned. And Noy's and Chaim's mother, Hannah, took to Facebook and said, hey, by the way, this has been like posted everywhere. This is bullshit. This is not something he didn't have anything to do with this film. He may have known Yuval, but he didn't fucking, you know, this is, you know, shame on you guys for saying this.
Yes. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Yesterday in a thread in a private group about the Oscar award to No Other Land, I shared that my son, Dr. Chaim Katzman, visited Masfar Yatta, the village where the documentary was filmed, and included a picture of him in the village. Someone shared the picture on Instagram and included a nasty comment about how Hamas killed peace activists as well. Others used her post and an interview with filmmaker Yuval Abraham, in which Chaim is mentioned as someone he knew who was killed on October 7th, to criticize the filmmakers for not mentioning Chaim, who helped make the film, in their speech at the Oscars. This went viral. Some posts have been edited or taken down, but screenshots are still out there. As far as I know, Chaim was not involved in making No Other Land, and there is no need to be outraged on his behalf. And whoever used the picture I shared in a private group without permission to denigrate murdered peace activists, and whoever uses language like, but Hamas killed them anyway, shame on you.
Boom. And like that to me, I mean, you can't get a better example of the Zionist willingness to utilize the deaths of their own people.
Right. For the ones they actually claim to care about, as opposed to the Palestinians, who we know they don't.
Right, exactly. Yeah, the people that they claim to care about, the people that they claim are the reason why we need to do this to Palestinians.
Right. Exactly.
Because we have to protect people like this. They have no interest in protecting any Israeli, especially an Israeli who is going to be a peace activist. In fact, they're going to use the fact that he was a peace activist in order to say, hey, you're a fool if you think you can make peace with these people. So it's like the perfect,
which also denigrates his his life and his memory.
Yes.
And his brother wrote something for The Nation about how he wouldn't want what Israel is doing right now. And what's also really interesting is that these people, the same people who do stuff like this, they're like, have you no shame? Look what happened to the Bibas family. Yeah. And now you have the Bibas family being like, shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
Stop. They wrote a cease and desist letter. Mm-hmm. And again, it's just like they pretend to have this like morality and like almost like couthness and decorum on their side. And we're so, we respect no norms or no civil society stuff. And they're just absolute ghouls.
Yes, yes. They're constantly just like, you know, ever since October 7th, the constant refrain from Israelis and Zionists and just general pro-Israel people has been like, what happened to your humanity? And and it's just so fake. It is just so put on, because if they truly cared about humanity, then they would be able to look at the humanity of any of the people that have been killed because of the Israeli, quote, response to October 7th. You know, it's right, like exactly. They do not see Palestinians as humans. They don't see anyone as human beings unless they are working to support the state. And if that isn't fascism, what is? You know?
Yeah.
That's what fascists do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
WWFD. What would a fascist do? It literally, it's WWID. What would Israel do? Yeah. Or what is Israel doing? I released a video, I shot it like a while ago, but then Double Down News released it and people were really mad at it about it. Mm-hmm. And it was like about the history of Israel. And someone was like, how dare you release this? The day we found out about what happened to the Bibas family. It's like, or how dare you release this a week after we found out, or a month
they've
before
been doing this. Revealed. They've literally been doing this.
And also imagine if we said to them, we couldn't, because if we were like, how could you do this on the day that a Palestinian child was murdered? They wouldn't be able to say or do anything.
Because they'd be like, since which one?
Not October 7th, but before October 7th. Yes,
exactly. No, it's so funny. They would also do things like, how could you post this today on Tu B'Shvat? Yes. The famous Jewish tree holiday. And it'd be like, nobody knows that.
Right. Well, you're a bad Jew. Yeah. You just gave away the game. Yeah. That's the other thing. It's like only it's like they go back and forth. It's like they only religious Jews are the real Jews, except like Theodore Herzl was secular atheist, you know. Right. But they'll do whatever they can, use whatever they can.
Right. They don't care.
Oh, yeah. And by the way, I forgot to plug this at the beginning, but please do support the show at patreon.com/TheKatieHelperShow, patreon.com/TheKatieHelperShow. And if you support it there, you get the full interview that I did with David Cross and also with Wallace Shawn that we're showing excerpt of. Matt, I know you have a heart out. Do you have time, like 5 more minutes to talk about this other film, Zone of Interest, or do you have baby?
I do have to go pick up my baby from daycare, but yeah. I do thank you. Dad. I thank you so much for having me on and talking about this stuff.
Of course.
I love to come.
Oh, wow. Interesting. You're okay with talking about the film about Palestine, but once we talk about the Holocaust, you have to bounce.
No, I don't. I can't talk about that. I'm not, legally not allowed to. My handlers in Iran would be very mad. So
right, that's true. Yeah,
I can't. But thank you for
allowing me. Yes, of course. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, and thanks for having me.
And where can people find you?
You can find me listening to Bat Hezbara, the world's most moral podcast. It's on YouTube and it's on all the podcast apps. And come to Sacramento March 16th. I'm going to be at the Punchline Comedy Club with Francesca Fiorentini. That's my wife.
My wife.
No Zionist. I say that. Oh, yeah, I got to say that at the end of every my wife.
No wife, no Zionist, no Kazakhstani.
That's right. Yeah. So Francesca and I are going to be at the Sacramento Punchline March 16th. And we'll be at Cobb's on May 7th. Come to that and listen to the podcast. Thank you, everyone.
Yeah, it's great.
Thanks.
Thank you so much
for having me.
Talk soon.
Bye.
All right. So we got a little bit more to get through. And that means that I don't mean to treat you as second fiddle, Brad, but I would like to invite you onto the stage if you're prepared for it. How do you feel? Do you want to powder your forehead? Nice. Very good. All right. I thought you'd be interested in this, and I would like to riff with you about this. So here, we are about to play a David Cross interview. And why are we playing this David Cross interview? Because full transparency, I filmed this last year when I was very sick, and because I was sick, and you can kind of hear it in you'll hear it in my voice. We fell behind. We were behind. I was behind and didn't release it. But it's very relevant because this is our Oscars episode, right? And way before this thing happened, this scandal where people dared to give an Oscars award to a documentary that was directed by a Palestinian and a Jewish Israeli, there is another scandal because another thing happened that was horrible. This was last year and people may have seen, it's an excellent, excellent film. It's called Zone of Interest, and Zone of Interest is basically about, it's a slightly fictionalized like imagining of the life of German Auschwitz commandant Rudolf Hess and his wife Hedwig, and they live with their family in a home right next to Auschwitz, the concentration camp. So here we're going to see what happened when Jonathan Glazer, the director, who's Jewish, won Best Foreign Film at last year's Oscars. We're going to listen to what he said, and then we're going to see the reaction.
Our choices were made to reflect and confront us in the present, not to say, look what they did then, rather look what we do now. Our film shows where dehumanization leads at its worst. It shaped all of our past and present. Right now, we stand here as men who refute their Jewishness and the Holocaust being hijacked by an occupation which has led to conflict for so many innocent people. Whether the victims of October... whether the victims of October the 7th in Israel or the ongoing attack on Gaza, all are victims of this dehumanization. How do we resist?
Okay, so here, this is what Adrian Brody, by the way, hint, hint, should have done, which was made an explicit connection between what happened during the Holocaust and what is happening now in Palestine. And not only is it important, I think, because it's about genocides and Holocaust, but there's a really scary, what's really scary about the film is that these Nazis live next to Jews, next to concentration camp inmates, including Jews mostly, but, communists, Slavs, were, other undesirables. And it's as if there's nothing over there. Like, they live in their own, I mean, they're slightly, yes, slightly no, but it's a very much a commentary on how they can be totally separate from this inhumanity that they themselves are perpetuating. And a lot of people compare that to the way that people live in Israel right next to an open air concentration camp. And Israelis came up with that term, by the way, for Gaza.
Or almost like having a music festival right next to.
So now people were very mad about that because, again, you can't acknowledge that there's an occupation. You can't urge an end to ethnic cleansing. All of that is very offensive to people like show fave John Poderitz. Let's see what he had to say about this. Jonathan Glazer, you can go F yourself and stuff your Oscar up your ass. Okay, this guy gets very emotional, by the way, watching the Oscars. I feel like regardless of his politics, he just may want to, like, for his own health, step away and not watch the Oscars. Maybe watch it a couple days later after you know the results. They'll be good for your health. But my favorite response to what Glazer said, the Jewish director of this absolutely stunning film, was not reacting to what he said, but changing what he said. Here is what Batya Unger Sargon had to say when he made his statement. Let's take a look at her interesting tweet. I simply cannot fathom the moral rot in someone's soul that leads them to win an award for a movie about the Holocaust and with the platform given to them to accept that award by saying, we stand here as men who refute their Jewishness. Like, the dishonesty there is unbelievable. Yeah. She obviously, they did say that, but that wasn't the complete sentence. They said that. They said they refute their Jewishness. And the Holocaust being hijacked by an occupation, which has led to conflict for so many innocent people.
Right.
But she can't. So I guess she was just really angry. And unlike Poderitz, who embraces his racism and Jewish supremacy, she had to pretend that there was something else wrong with it. But you know what I like about Batya? You gotta give her credit for being consistent. She's very hard on people, never gives them the benefit of the doubt. Look at how hard she was on non-Jew Elon Musk when he gave a Nazi salute. Let's see how she held his feet to the fire. As a person with a strong track record of criticizing Elon Musk, I feel extremely confident asserting that this was not a Nazi salute. Elon Musk is a friend to the Jews. This is a man with Asperger's exuberantly throwing his heart to the crowd. We don't need to invent our outrage. Okay, we don't need to invent our outrage. What we need to do is misquote and misrepresent the words spoken by an actual Jew. But he's not a friend to the Jews, according to her, because he's someone who sees Palestinians as human beings and someone who thinks we should be talking about that and not just about Jewish suffering and the Holocaust.
Yeah.
So that was incredible.
And I also just don't understand the contradiction there. Like, you have to pick one. He is either the most brilliant human being that has ever existed on this earth that will take us to Mars and solve all of our problems.
Right.
Or he is, someone who is suffering from mental afflictions that render him, you know, he doesn't know what he's saying. Like,
right.
It can't be, it can't, right, it can't exactly, be both.
Yeah. Pick a narrative.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. Also, like, it's interesting. She and the ADL have the same weird, I don't know, tick where they give Elon Musk the benefit of the doubt when he does a Nazi salute. But anyone who says anything pro-Palestine is somehow an anti-Semite. Yeah, I wonder what that is.
You're calling for not slaughtering innocent people on a college campus. You don't get the benefit of the doubt that you're actually just advocating for human rights. But this dude throws up a Nazi salute like at least twice. And then there's a track record of him. Granted, it could just be a coincidence. It could just be the Asperger's or whatever. But like, I don't know if you saw this, Katie. He would put up posts with, what was it, like 14 American flags. Maybe I'm getting that number wrong. But basically these kind of like dog whistle type nods toward white supremacist neo-Nazi type, you know, things. They've got this like phrase that I don't know if it's 14 words, 11 words, something like that. But
right. I know you're talking about. I don't remember. Yeah. I'm not unlike Elon, I'm not up on my Nazi discourse.
I'm sorry I don't have it prepared, but yeah, he would like post stuff like that with like that number of American flags. And just other stuff like that, that to me, at the same time, then going to literally that convention in Germany, you know, speaking.
Oh, yeah. And saying that the AfD needs to like get over its, Germany needs to get over its past, and speaking for the AfD, the neo-Nazi thing. Yeah.
People in the chat are, thank you, everyone. It's 14 words. It's like, you know, put all of these things together. I'm sorry, that's a Nazi salute. And he's just openly. Yeah.
And also talking about like white, not white genocide, but there was something about white people and Jews that he liked. And he was like, someone tweeted and he was like, that's the truth. Yes. And in fact, that's why he then was sent to Israel to do like a PR thing to like show his loyalty to Israel. And it's fine that he says anti-Semitic stuff as long as he's, you know, supports Zionism.
Right. Yeah.
So when that happened, though, it wasn't just Batya lying about it. It wasn't just John Podera, it's kind of actually like wishing physical violence against this filmmaker. Right. But then there were a bunch of people in Hollywood. Now, this time they were brave enough to give their names and they signed a letter condemning Glazer. Let's play this video. It's just so we can hear how dumb their arguments are. And the one person whose name I recognized was Deborah Messing.
Zone of Interest Oscar's acceptance speech has been signed by more than 450 Jewish Hollywood professionals. The group denounced Glazer's controversial comments made when accepting the Academy Award for Best International Film on March 10th. The letter reads in part, "We refute our Jewishness being hijacked for the purpose of drawing a moral equivalence between a Nazi regime that sought to exterminate a race of people and an Israeli nation that seeks to avert its own extermination." In his acceptance speech at the 2024 Oscars, Glazer read from a prepared speech to thank his partners and then made a statement addressing the current Israel-Gaza conflict. How do we resist? The open letter this week continued, "The use of words like occupation to describe an indigenous Jewish people defending a homeland that dates back thousands of years and has been recognized as a state by the United Nations distorts history." To read the full open letter, head to thr.com.
No, thank you. But as you can see, they made some really idiotic arguments, like it's not occupation because indigenous people, that's not like kind of tabling the whole debate about that, which is a whole other thing. Like, that's not actually the definition of an occupation. And the UN has also declared that this is an occupation. Also, these people are the same people who would write off the UN as an anti-Semitic entity. So which is it? They're anti-Semites and unreliable, or are they reliable? But someone said that Blossom signed the letter too. I looked for Maya Bialik. I didn't see it, but I believe that she did.
And setting aside that a lot of these heads of the Israeli government, those aren't their real names. Like the vast majority of them.
Right.
Like,
they all changed them to sound like Israeli, Middle Eastern.
Netanyahu lived in Philly. Yeah. Like in
Philly, and his people come from Poland.
Indigenous protecting their
indigenous to Europe. Yeah, there are some Jews who were there, Mizrahi Jews, and they lived there and in like harmony with these people because they weren't trying to create a Jewish majority. Right. But anyway, But luckily, some other people. These people apparently are Jewish Hollywood. Well, there's another Jewish Hollywood out there. So luckily, much cooler Jews in Hollywood signed a letter which said, "We are proud Jews who denounce the weaponization of Jewish identity and the memory of the Holocaust to justify what many experts in international law, including leading Holocaust scholars, have identified as a genocide in the making. We reject the false choice between Jewish safety and Palestinian freedom." And then he said, and this is a really good part. They said that, quote, "the attacks on Glazer," which came from the other Jewish Hollywood people, "the attacks on Glazer are a dangerous distraction from Israel's escalating military campaign, which has already killed over 32,000 Palestinians in Gaza and brought hundreds of thousands to the brink of starvation." Okay, now, among the people who signed this were much cooler people than Deborah Messing. They included people like Boots Riley, Joel Cohen, Joaquin Phoenix, Wallace Shawn, and David Cross. Which brings us to our first interview excerpt of the night. Here is an interview that I did right after that with David Cross. And David Cross, people know, is a director, a comedian, an actor. And my favorite role of his is probably from Arrested Development. And so I guess without any further ado, let's just play this David Cross interview. And then after that, we're going to play an excerpt of a Wallace Shawn interview. And then if you like them, then you can join the Patreon, or just if you're already a Patreon, you get to watch the full show, the full interview with Wallace Shawn. We have released that. It's been out. But what you get new, if you're already Patreons, is you get David Cross full interview. All right. Let's take it away. Welcome, David Cross. Why don't you just start off by asking you what motivated you to sign this letter in support of Jonathan Glazer?
Somebody passed it along, said, "Do you want to sign it?" I read it and said, "Sure."
Is it hard today, in today's context in Hollywood and in the comedy scene, to be critical of Israel?
I mean, maybe for some people, I don't give a shit. I don't know. I don't fear any backlash. I don't care. To me, this is the morally ethical right thing to do. So I don't have a problem doing that.
What are your thoughts on the people who have condemned Jonathan Glazer?
I assume they're being reactionary and, speaking from a very emotional place. And I understand that. I just don't share that. I pride myself in the ability to remove emotion from decisions I make about morality and, ethics.
Have you faced any backlash or criticism about this issue?
Not that I know of, but I stay off social media. I mean, I use it to tell people where I'm doing stuff, but I don't have it on my phone or on my computer. I don't use it. I live in Brooklyn. I got a family. I'm mostly dealing with them, taking my kid to school. And, occasionally you'll say something on stage that people will go, "Whoa," but that's really the only response I'm aware of. I don't care. It doesn't mean anything to me.
I guess you have already created a, career and, following where you're being outspoken is built into it. You were raised Jewish. I know that you were raised Jewish, but you consider yourself an atheist, right?
Yes, because I am. Technically.
Yeah. You self-identify as an atheist.
The science is in. So, yeah.
An atheist, right. Were you raised with Zionism?
Not through my parents, but, at the temple, and that was a part of it, I was certainly aware of it, but that wasn't a big deal at home, and I was raised Reformed. So it's, the major holidays, a handful of other things. And that was pretty much the extent of it. It's just cultural stuff. It was for a lot of Jews, or American Jews, at least, it's tribal, it's cultural, it's just it was that stuff.
Were you bar mitzvahed?
Yep.
Oh wow. Okay. I wasn't bar mitzvahed.
It was a deal I made with my mom that I would get I would get bar mitzvahed and I'd, you know, get confirmed, go through Sunday school, and then I could do whatever I wanted, which is exactly what I did.
Plus you get a lot of presents, right?
No, I didn't. It's a long story, but no, I got about about $320, and then my dad took that.
Oh, yeah. Wow!
I'm sorry,
not a very good look.
Borrowed it. Yeah.
Okay, got it. It's not a very good look for our people.
Well, that was just him particular.
What your dad did.
Was just
okay.
Yeah.
Not because he's Jewish.
No,
I just want to make that clear.
No, he was an asshole.
But he gave you British citizenship, right?
I got it recently. And yes, he's from Leeds, England. And I work in the UK quite a bit and have for the last 20 years. And I wanted the dual citizenship for obvious reasons. That became more urgent in the last, 7 years. I didn't want to have to go through him. I've been estranged from him since I was a teenager and I don't want to contact him, but, I finally found a service in Scotland that was able to acquire it with just the handful of, certifications that I had, you know. And so now, yes, I am a dual citizen, but I didn't have to contact him, so that's good.
Right. Nice special program in Scotland for children of asshole dads.
They help you or help one do that if your parents are dead or whatever it is. Like, all I have is a photocopy of my mom's marriage certificate. Will that work? And they just dug through all the records and got it.
So do you remember becoming critical of Israel, becoming involved in this issue? Did you have an aha moment? Is this a special issue for you or is it more just part of your commitment to human rights?
Yeah, it's not. I've known Israel is, has been corrupt and, and it's an apartheid state and there's no argument you can have with me that comes from an emotional place that's going to change my mind about facts. And if we're going to understand the universally understood definition of what is apartheid, well, that's Israel. It fits. There's nothing to argue. And I don't care. I don't feel tribal. I don't give a shit. And that applies to everything. I don't, get upset about, white men are victims and I'm a white man. I should be upset, or Jews or whatever, bald people. Just a cursory understanding of history and in recent history and what how Israel came to be and all that. There's right and there's wrong. You can't bend it to your will.
Did you ever have a positive opinion of Israel that was kind of disrupted by reality, or did you never really?
The concept, if things were equitable, but they're not, the concept is fine. I don't have a problem with that. There should have been a two-state solution a long time ago. The Oslo Accords should have been, not blatantly scuppered. If on paper it could work, but it didn't. I don't have the kind of hatred that Israelis have for Palestinians. I don't have that for any, culture or ethnicity. I wasn't raised to hate, to see this thing as my enemy.
You tweeted at one point in response to David Zirin, who writes about sports for The Nation, David Zirin wrote, as a Jew, I want to welcome anyone who wants to criticize a lobbying coalition funded by arms manufacturers, evangelical Christians, and allies of the right-wing edge of Israeli politics. Criticizing AIPAC is not anti-Semitic, and it's absurd that this even needs to be said. And you tweeted, quote tweeted that, you said, part of what led me from Judaism to atheism was becoming self-aware while observing the hypocrisy, willful ignorance, and blindness to their obvious double standard that my fellow Jews at Temple displayed, echoed, and supported, pure tribalism.
Yeah, sure.
How did that manifest, the this willful ignorance? Do you remember at Temple?
Yeah, it's the hypocrisy that anybody in any religion that purports to be these, you know, humane and caring and selfless and generous and loving and you know, whatever that, and then to see it not being, just to see the opposite, you know, just the hypocrisy of it, specifically the idea of anti, not consumerism, but the idea that there was always this kind of you know, there, I remember also at the time I was young, but there was a whole concentration on Ethiopian Jews and getting them kind of repatriated somewhere where they could practice, and but you know, nobody wanted to have them in their house or sponsor them, and you know, Atlanta when I was a kid is very, as there was a very hospitable, genteel racism. It was kind. It was a certain kind of racism, and also the status that people were occupied with, preoccupied with, who had the most jewels, or what they were wearing, or you know, and what they would talk about immediately after. You know, you'd have this whole service, and the rabbi would be you know, giving this homily, and we're all, you know, it's about kindness and generosity or whatever. And then everybody's nodding along, and then, you know, okay, the service is over, Shabbat Shalom, you kiss the person to your left and your right. And then they're just immediately talking about, you know, stupid, racist, shitty stuff because they're shitty.
Racist against like whom?
I mean, it would be either, it was not that I want to make clear, I didn't hear this every time, but these are things that you would observe or overhear, you know, on occasion. And it was enough of those things, enough of those times, you know, whether it was, you know, just dismissive of certain groups or whatever it was, there wasn't like a specific time, you know, or event. It was just a cumulative over many, many years.
I grew up in New York City, so I used to actually not really identify as Jewish because I wasn't religious. I'm not religious. But then over time, I became Jewish because I realized that, well, for two reasons, honestly. One is that I felt like it was important for people who are Jewish to show the world that Israel doesn't represent all Jews. And also, I realized that I do come from a particular kind of like secular Jewish background and culture. I wonder, I mean, growing up in Atlanta, were you seen as Jewish? Like,
oh, yeah. It was.
Like you kind of don't have a choice, yeah, right?
It was, I mean, it was until I went to this high school, a school for the arts in town. We moved actually, but I was in Roswell, Georgia, which is like a very rural suburb, but it was pretty detached from the city back then. Now it's all one big sprawling thing. But yeah, I mean, it was clear. I was, you know, I looked weird. I had a Jew fro. I had thick glasses. I mean, I clearly didn't look like the kind of Southern Baptist, standard Southern Baptist white kids that were at the schools.
And so how did people react to that or treat you?
Oh, I mean, for the most part, it was fine. I definitely, there were several anti-Semitic things and things said to me or behaviors towards me or my family. But it wasn't like a daily thing and nobody threw rocks through her window or anything like that. But it was, and you know, some of the teachers said some stunningly ignorant things. But I mean, in retrospect, now that I am older, I'm like, oh, teachers are dumb people too. You know, but when you're a kid, you're like, you look up to them as sources of authority and or figures of authority and the source of information and how we should be, you know, living our lives. And there were some, yeah, shockingly ignorant things too. But it wasn't like a daily thing, but there were plenty of, you know, this guy, I'd have to ask my sister, but there was this guy who, occasionally would throw pennies or dimes at me and my sister. And then you're like, pick it up, Jew. Yeah.
Oh my God. A classmate. I'm
a guy in school. No, not a teacher. No. Oh, yeah, that would,
that would be, oh, next
my mom
level.
Would have freaked out. No, it was a class. It was a guy.
Yeah. You know.
And it was, you know, you look back on it, he was trying to impress his friends and stuff and who knows what, but there were, you know, plenty of, incidences, but I never feared for my safety, really. You know, it wasn't that kind of thing.
So what politicized you, more generally speaking?
I would probably think it's mostly my mom's influence, but it was never like a proactive thing. It was just her rational take on things. And I don't know why, but I have been skeptical about stuff from a young age and in part what I read, you know, and I don't know. I was interested in it.
Any books in particular or writers?
When I was, I probably would have been about 10. Well, let's see, maybe 12, but I read a book that my mom had, and it was written by Jerry Rubin of the Chicago Seven, and that was really kind of an altering thing. Like these, even though we look at them as young, you know, they were adults. And even though they, you know, were when I was 12, and it was just a really cool thing. And you know, when I was really, really young, the Vietnam War, it just permeated everything. The Vietnam War and Watergate. And I wasn't really old enough to fully understand, but it's all anybody was focused on. And so I'm sure that had something to do with it. I don't know why I got why I'm such a news junkie kind of person, but I suppose it had quite a bit to do with my mom just sort of steering me that way, not consciously, but just I read early at an early age, and you know, and she was very encouraging. Just, you know, read whatever you want. I'm not going to tell you what to read, what not to read, and so I read what I wanted and. I read a lot, you know, there wasn't a whole lot to do in Roswell.
Is your mom, does she consider herself an activist or a politicized person or a leftist?
Oh, she's not an activist at all in any way. And never was. She just had strong opinions and, we would talk about that. I think she was thrilled to have somebody to talk to too about that stuff. Cause my other sisters weren't interested. She didn't have very many friends, and so I think, you know, it bonded us in a way.
Shifting gears, I'm really enjoying your podcast.
Oh, thanks.
It's great.
I'll be going down and talking to Lewis Black later.
One of the people who signed the letter condemning Jonathan Glazer was Deborah Messing, who I know you were in a film with. Did you ever talk about politics? And to see that full interview, you can find that, which ends, I really left you guys with a cliffhanger, huh? You can find that at patreon.com/The Katie Halper Show. That is patreon.com/The Katie Halper Show. And we talk about a lot of great stuff involving film and his role in my favorite. I can't believe I said my favorite role of his was Arrested Development. That's my second favorite. Well, no, that's my favorite role because it's a real role and it's hilarious. But I guess my favorite thing that he's in would have to be Waiting for Guffman, which is like the best film of all time. And actually, coming full circle, the next person who we're going to show an excerpt from is Wallace Shawn, who, like David Cross, signed that letter, but also has done a lot of speaking out more recently. He's also on the steering committee of board of directors of Jewish Voice for Peace. I was really excited to talk to him. And here is an excerpt of that interview. And another funny coincidence is that he was not in Waiting for Guffman, but there is a reference to him in Waiting for Guffman, which I ask him about at the end of our interview that you can find at patreon.com/The Katie Halper Show. Okay, let's take it away. Wallace Shawn. And what did you observe in Central America when you were traveling there that contributed to your radicalization?
It was more I became radicalized and then we went there.
Got it.
Because it was, I've always been physically very cowardly. Well, in every way, but physically in particular, I've always been very small and frightened of everything. And my parents were quite neurotic and overprotective. I became so angry that I, for a period of 3 or 4 years, lost physical fear. So I wanted to go to Nicaragua and see if maybe there was a better way of organizing a society. Then we went to El Salvador and Guatemala and Honduras, and Deborah Eisenberg wrote some great fiction.
Forgot to say, Deborah Eisenberg, as he reveals in earlier on in the interview, and as some people may know, is Wallace Shawn's longtime girlfriend. And right before this part of the interview, I had brought up the fact that during an interview he did with Chris Hedges, he mentioned the fact that Wallace Shawn used to kind of avoid two sections of the news in the New York Times, stories about Central America and stories about Israel. Okay, back to the videotape.
I mean, she wrote a whole book of stories called Under the 82nd Airborne. And, you know, the American army was fighting, really, but secretly in a way. And, you know, teaching people how to torture, but not physically torturing people, maybe. And of course, that was a secret. And we met, you know, we met people on the other side, you know, people who were in El Salvador, people who were on the other side and who were taking a risk to speak to us because we could have been CIA. We could have turned them in. You know, we met people who'd been tortured. And we met, you know, young children who could have a political conversation that our New York friends couldn't have. You know, kids who had seen things and knew about things.
That inspired the fever?
Well, I sort of used the, as I say, I sort of had already become quite a committed leftist before we made the trip. But in the story of the fever, the character is converted by the trip.
The lamp by my bed doesn't work. The electric lights won't turn on. The rebels have blown up the electricity towers. There's a small war going on in this poor country where my language isn't spoken.
Well, who cares? But it's my own, it's my autobiographical play. I mean, not the things that happened, but what I went through intellectually and emotionally, that's all in the fever.
Something started happening to me a year or so ago. I started to notice certain things which I wouldn't have noticed before. The life I lead is irredeemably corrupt. It has no justification. My sympathy for the poor does not change the life of the poor.
I hadn't seen the film before, but I just watched it last night. Yeah.
No joke.
Yeah, it was great. And it was funny to see Michael Moore.
Yes.
Yeah, who plays a journalist.
Yes.
Reporter, yeah. And the amazing Vanessa Redgrave.
She is amazing.
Vanessa Redgrave was very outspoken on the issue of Palestine and paid a price for that.
In the last few weeks, you've stood firm and you have refused to be intimidated by the threats of a small bunch of Zionist hoodlums whose behavior is an insult to the stature of Jews all over the world and to their great and heroic record of struggle against fascism and oppression. And I salute that record, and I salute all of you for having stood firm and dealt a final blow against that period when Nixon and McCarthy launched a worldwide witch hunt against those who tried to express in their lives and their work the truth that they believed in. I salute you, and I thank you, and I pledge to you that I will continue to fight against anti-Semitism and fascism. Thank you.
Ms. Redgrave, would you identify what you mean by Zionist hoodlums, please?
The Jewish Defense League, who I do not believe have anything in common with millions of Jews all over the world, and whose behavior in recent weeks and threats made to a number of Academy members and to myself are an insult to Jews all over the world and an insult to the heroic record of Jews in their fight against fascism and oppression. Because it can't be a secret to anybody that there has been a great deal not only written, but also threatened. And these threats were concrete threats made by this particular group. And they're a small group, but it made a lot of noise and they did make real threats. And I thought that it was something for the whole membership of the Academy to be very, very proud of, that they stood very firm and very tranquil and refused to be intimidated. And moreover, made what I think was really the last nail in the coffin, if you like, of that period, put the lid on that period of history when McCarthy, Nixon, and a number of others did launch a witch hunt and did drive many people in our profession right out of the business for a period. You know, I have made a film called The Palestinian, which I believe is a contribution to an understanding of what is taking place. Thank you.
Vanessa, can we get off the political stand? When you...
Well, please ask your colleagues to.
And by the way, I have to start watching Evil. I've heard it's very good and that you're really good in it.
Oh, thank you. It's interesting in that it's written by a married couple.
Oh.
She's Jewish. He is a believing Catholic.
Oh, wow. That is interesting.
So he actually believes in demonic possession and the things that go on in that show. I play a priest.
Right. Yeah. Oh, that's interesting. It's rare to find someone, I think, who's actually not. I was going to say it's rare to find someone who's that religious, who's married to someone who's of a different religion. But one of my good friends is a pastor and her wife is a Buddhist. So I guess it's not that atypical.
Yeah. I mean, well, Buddhism is not really a religion.
Right. It's not. Yeah. Right. But she's not Christian, the wife.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, some people, if you say Buddhism isn't a religion, some people say, well, boy, my type of Buddhism is.
Yeah, right. to philosophy. Although you could also argue, right, that for some people, religion is a philosophy. I would love it if more people followed the philosophy of the religion. Well, I mean, the good parts of it, obviously.
The good parts. That's trouble.
What are you working on right now? Anything?
Oh, I've been, I've written a new play. And so I've been, quietly rehearsing that for a while with Andre Gregory.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
When is that going to be?
If all goes very, very well, it would be in the fall.
Okay, great. By the way, have you seen Waiting for Guffman?
Yes.
It's like one of my favorite movies ever. And I love at the end when Corky is showing off his My Dinner with Andre action figures.
Yes, indeed.
This is, without a doubt, one of my favorite items. My Dinner with Andre action figures. And what you can do, which is so cute, is you can reenact the whole scene, you know, where the two guys talk to each other and say, you know, oh, I'm sure glad you found a good restaurant. You know, it's so hard these days to get in. You know, who do you know? Oh, I just called, made a call, spur of the moment. Oh, you can always get a reservation, you know. That's not from the movie, but you can make up your own dialogue.
And that is why I was saying that my favorite thing that David Cross has ever appeared in, although his shows are great and with Bob Odenkirk also, but my personal favorite is that film, Waiting for Guffman. And as you can see in that very short clip, that gives you a sense of why so funny. So, by the way, let me explain to you the context of why Vanessa Redgrave said what she said. So I'm reading an article from the Substack of Asa Winstanley, who, by the way, is at Electronic Intifada. He's a journalist. He's also wrote a great book called The Weaponization of Antisemitism, where I have somewhere around here. But he also had his office raided, his home raided by British police, because he's someone who writes about Israel-Palestine and criticizes Israel. And you can't do that without getting raided by the British police. So his piece says, how one actress faced down the Zionist hoodlums in Hollywood. Vanessa Redgrave's 1978 Oscar acceptance speech has stood the test of time. At the 1978 Oscars, left-wing actress Vanessa Redgrave won the award for Best Supporting Actress. She had played the title role in Julia, an anti-Nazi fighter. She gave a speech which, as recently as 2019, the New York Times still considered rendered that night the most political ceremony in Academy history. The previous year, Redgrave had sold two houses to raise the funds to make The Palestinian, a documentary about the Palestinian struggle, which she narrated herself. After her Oscar nomination for Julia, terrorist group, the Jewish Defense League, JDL, threatened the members of the Academy with repercussions if they voted for Redgrave, citing her one-sided film and her support for the Palestinian people. They put a bounty on Redgrave's head and picketed Oscar night, burning her in effigy as, quote, Arafat's whore, end quote. A JDL member would later go on to be convicted of the bombing of a Los Angeles theater, which had been set to screen The Palestinians. So it was a great victory that the Academy had ignored the JDL's threats and voted for Redgrave to win the Oscar. She used her speech to thank the audience. I pay tribute to you, and I think you should be very proud that in the last few weeks you've stood firm. So that was the context for this award ceremony speech. And the JDL is indeed a terrorist organization, and she should be commended. And she also was in The Fever, which was the film version of the play by Wallace Shawn. So that's why this came up. It also came up because we spend most of the interview talking about Israel-Palestine, Wallace Shawn and I do. And actually, some clips from that interview went really viral because he said some very, I mean, I don't think they're provocative, but a lot of people think that they were provocative. And actually, what's interesting is going back to that thing about like where Israel defenders say, how dare you on the day that we found out about the Bibas children, or how dare you a week after we found out about the Bibas children, whatever. When I released this clip, some schlock, I don't even remember, some blog, some right wing Zionist blogger wrote that he was so upset that this video was released the day that Israeli hostages, gaunt Israeli hostages were released. Again, would he be offended by something being released the same day that Palestinian hostages, who are much skinnier than the gaunt Israeli hostages are. And also, it should be pointed out, unlike the Palestinians, Israel has unlimited food. So when their prisoners come out starved and gaunt, it's because they've chosen to do that. When Israelis come out that way, it's in part usually now because there is not food there because Israel has cut that off. Anyway, thank you everyone for coming. This was a great show, very unique. We will see you next week. And to see the full interview with David Cross, go to patreon.com/The Katie Halper Show. Again, that's patreon.com/The Katie Halper Show. And to see the full Wallace Shawn interview, go to patreon.com/The Katie Halper Show. If you're in the Brussels area, I will be speaking with Yanis Varoufakis, Melanie Schweizer, and Grace Blakely on Friday. And I'll put a link to that, but it's at the National Theater in Brussels. Bye, everyone. Thanks again so much for listening to The Katie Halper Show. To hear the rest of that discussion, please join the Patreon at patreon.com/The Katie Halper Show. Again, that's patreon.com/The Katie Halper Show. Please leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And as always, we remind you that this show could not happen without the support of our listeners. To support the show, visit patreon.com/The Katie Halper Show, where for just $1 a month, you help make this show happen. And for $5 a month, you get great bonus content, including extended interviews, bonus episodes, sneak peeks at my upcoming documentary, and early access interviews. Our show is produced by me, Katie Halper, and Brad Bloom. Brad Bloom and Andrew Calloway are the audio engineers, and our researcher is Nate Newborn. Our theme song is by the band Cordova. See you next time.